Blog Talk Radio.
Southern Gothic Literature. Gothic literature was popular in Europe during the 1800s. Famous authors in this genre include Mary Shelley, Edgar Allan Poe, and Bram Stoker. Specifically in Southern Gothic literature, unusual ironic events provide plot progression and explore the social and cultural problems of the times. Famous authors of this subgenre include Flannery O'Connor, William Faulkner, Harper Lee, Truman Capote, and Tennessee Williams. Southern Gothic literature frequently features the grotesque through characters with negative qualities or bizarre landscapes. Common features include freakishness, an outsider, imprisonment, which may be figurative or literal, violence, and a sense of place. Freakishness can be demonstrated by a character who is different from everyone else due to their negative view of the world. This relates to the idea of an outsider, who is also set apart but acts as the hero and forces the other characters to be enlightened. Violence may be conveyed due to racial, social, and class differences. Southern towns are commonly old and small with traditional buildings. Gothic works question what good really means and how different it is from evil. Religion, education, and marriage are seen as events of decline as opposed to a new beginning. Lies, cruelty, and crime reveal the corrupt nature of society. Characters are the opposite of their traditional role. For example, a priest would be manipulative and evil. Off-kilter characters are common and may be physically or mentally broken. An innocent character may appear, acting as a redeemer for mankind.
Welcome to Late Night Poets on All Poetry. And this is In Our Craft or Sullen Art, and I'm your host, Richard Weissman. And tonight's celebration of Halloween has an emphasis on Southern Gothic. So I'm going to start bringing some people into the room. And let's start with 585. You are on the air. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I was on mute extra early, just in your How you doing, Richard?
There we go. I'm doing great. How are you doing, Laurent?
Good. Absolutely thrilled with your choice of prompts this week. And the introduction that you just played was marvelous. I'll tell you one thing. If nothing else, and there's so much else that's rewarding, you always get an education. Or you always give us an education.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you know, when however long ago it was when Gene asked me to host a show, I figured let me play to my strong suit, which is literature / the history of literature. And so that's been what I've been doing ever since, and so far so good. And this night I think is going to be another stellar night of poetry that we've got on the board. So let me go ahead and bring everyone else on one by one. So here's Pam. How you doing, Pam?
Hey, Richard. Hey, Lauren. Good to hear you both. Looking forward to tonight's poetry.
Absolutely.
Good having you with us. Okay, and then we've got Cal. Hi, Cal.
Hello. Hi, Richard.
Good evening, Cal.
Welcome.
Laurent and Pam.
Glad you could join us. And I know you've got a poem, so let's bring everyone else on, and then we'll start getting to the poetry. Here's Bobby.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Bobby. Hi, welcome.
Glad, the multi-talented Bobby. Us. With a memory that amazes me every day.
And I know you brought a piece for us as well. And then I've got 409. I'm not sure who that is, but we're going to find out. Hi, 409.
Hello?
You're on the air. Hey, is this Tom?
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Is
Hi,
this Tom?
Hi.
This is Keith Langford. I had got a notice on off poetry to call here.
Hey, Keith, how you doing?
Absolutely.
I'm good. How are you doing?
Glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here. This is my first time calling in.
Awesome. So tonight is, by request, Late Night Poets wanted all of the hosts to do Halloween theme, and I chose Southern Gothic Halloween. So we got some good poetry on the board. And I thought the intro, even though it was short and a little bit kind of on the nose, was a good introduction to the genre and the subgenre, gave us a little bit of the history. And I think a lot of people know To Kill a Mockingbird, probably the most famous novel of the genre, and yet people don't realize necessarily that it is Southern Gothic. So that was one kind of plus to the clip that I chose to play, was that it mentioned To Kill a Mockingbird, or Harper Lee at least. So, because once you say Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird, everyone's familiar with what Southern Gothic actually is. So I know we've got a lot of poetry, and we've got a full board. So, Laurent, if you're ready to roll, where would you like to go first?
Well, as always, you're our first reader, Richard. So we've got a piece by Eric Svensson for you to start us off with.
Okay.
Does that have a sound cloud?
So this one actually has a SoundCloud. And that's fine. I'll go ahead and play that, and then we can talk about it. So here goes.
Say what? Wednesday, October 31, 1973. Dust devils gyrate in the valley below. Behind maize planter mirages, rioters' red earth rises in protest, shakes fists at gathering thunderclouds in the west. My mate and I gave each other a high five. Firstly, we just completed our project on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Secondly, his grandfather's white army tent stood erected close by a meandering river on our farm. All of 13 years old, our primary school years were soon over. Adventurous, we stripped down, plunged into the river. Boy Scout prepared, we stacked a fire for the night. Finch, pheasant, and red bishops retorted among the river reeds. Feathered jurors discussed youth's unbridled lust for life. Back at camp, we sunned ourselves dry. Drowsiness overcame us, so we sought shelter. Beneath the white cloth of Grandpa's army tent, supine and sleepy, we both drifted off. In the distance, the diesel drawl of tractors soothed. I woke up with a jolt. A dark shadow fell across the open tent door. Wake up, Bruce. He's here. Who? What? Discombobulated, my mate sat upright. Shh. Outside, the familiar, unworldly gibberish grunted. Hulk tall, obsidian, black leathered skin, copper bangles, old frayed army coat hung on the hinges of bony, naked shoulders. Ghastly, big, fat, siren red, with black stripes, grasshoppers tied to his belt. Don't move. Too late. Infamous maize bag over his left shoulder dropped down with a thud. Something moved in there. His black opal body shone from animal fat as the army coat parted. More unintelligible gibberish, saliva dribbled down onto his chest. Two small sphinxes sat stone still inside the tent. Shh, he'll go away. Who is he? My father says he's a powerful witch doctor. Tekitek's shadow always fell upon one when least expected. Always on the periphery, his presence caused burgeoning body hairs to bristle. After what felt like eternity, the gibberish faded. Two terrified meerkats crawled out of their tent burrow. Dead silence. Down in the valley, the furrowed rows faded as dusk set in. Thunder sounded overhead. Lightning forks crackled, smacked the humid Halloween summer air. Soon the first furious oily raindrops fell, angry pellets that drove us back inside the tent. Witch Doctor Tekitek had done his work. As we watched from the inside, the stacked fire outside ignited itself. Devoured flames seared, sizzled furious raindrops into oblivion. My father always says Tekitek watches over us seven children. Say what? End poem.
Great storytelling from Eric as usual. Wonderful way to start off the evening. Quite innovative. I've never heard of Tekitek and was intrigued by his presence, activities, purpose. It seemed to me like there was lots of mystery and ambiguity. Is he alive? Is he a spirit? Does he protect? I like how Eric said he watches over us seven children. Or merely, does he scare the heck out of them? And I put that to Eric, and he said that he was this huge African guy who appeared and disappeared on their farms when they were children. Very real, very scary, always on the periphery, a medicine man, and had a good energy. So the protection was the key, I assume. Okay, so we have the pleasure of having a big room. So we're probably not all going to be able to comment on every poem, but maybe we'll start off by having three or four comments and then move on to the next poem. So for this one, I'm going to throw it over to my co-host for tonight, Laurent. What did you think of this one?
Well, Southern Gothic doesn't have to be the United States. It can be Southern Africa as well, I see. I thought this was a fascinating piece that Eric wrote, weaving the old stories, the ones that terrified, those being the ones that matter, into an involving poem from his past history. The image certainly lends veracity to the tale. I thought it was exceptionally well done and quite interesting.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, this is absolutely fascinating. I really like when he puts the old pictures with his life. And I like how when he tells a story about his life, his childhood, and his family, you can really get the sense of connection and the sense of how Eric became such a poet and artist, and, you know, seems to be an open-minded person. He definitely seemed to grow up within a diverse culture, and I like how there's that positive energy, that protective energy that comes from Techie Tech, and I really like the ending, but I also like the beginning where they talk about where he says, all of 13 years old, our primary school years are soon over, adventures we stripped down, plunged into the river. There's such kind of a sense of innocence within those lines, of truly enjoying the victories of boyhood. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Thanks, Pam. And let's take one more comment, and then we will move forward. So, Keith, you're new to calling in. What do you think of Eric's poem?
Hello?
Yeah, hi, we can hear you.
I didn't hear the question.
What did you think of Eric's poem?
I liked it. It was a good story. I'm probably not a good critic at this point. I liked it. It was a good poem. I enjoyed listening to it.
Are you able to see the poem, Keith? Did you find the link to it?
I did not, and I'm also I'm new to this. I'm not sure how to push the mute button here. I don't want to be making noises while you guys are reading. But which key would be to mute me out?
Well, it would be on your telephone. Mute on your phone.
Okay.
Are you a member of
your iPhone?
I'm sorry. I should let me let Richard take care of this. Go ahead.
I am a member of All Poetry.
So if you're looking, if you're on AP and you're on Late Night Poets, if you look at our main kind of chat screen, there's going to be hyperlinks that Laurent is going to share on the group, and that's how you find the poem that's being read.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Yep.
That will
help. And then if you're on an iPhone, you can just hit mute to mute yourself and then unmute to talk.
Okay. Yeah, I should have mastered this technology, but I made it to the mute button.
And insofar as commenting, Keith, just tell us, you know, whatever you feel. Like it, not like it. Doesn't have to be anything fancy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm honest. No, I did enjoy that poem. It was very good. I just wasn't ready to comment yet.
That's okay. It does take a little while to kind of get your sea legs. There's a lot of moving parts to the radio show. But it's a lot of fun,
too.
It's a little bit more lively than just making comments on all poetry through writing. So we enjoy it.
That's one thing I really like about all poetry is you get so many ideas from so many different people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we've been doing this for a long time. And Laurent and Pam have been doing it a lot longer than I have. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess let's move on to before we move on to our next poem, I should ask anyone who's in the room. So I know, Cal, you have a poem with us to be read tonight, and Bobby, you have one. Pam has one. Does anyone have to read and run, or do we have some time?
Not. You're stuck with me.
Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Good.
You're all stuck with me.
Great. Okay, yep. So Laurent, you've got free reign of the board in that case, wherever you want to go next.
All right, since our first one was a SoundCloud, but you are usually our first reader, the next one is for you. It's up.
Okay.
Art Junkie.
That's SoundCloud, too.
Oh, does it really?
Wow. That's okay.
All right, let me skip that. I'll give you another one.
Okay. That's cool.
Okay. Way down upon joy.
Ah, okay. This one is a read. Okay, I will give this a read. So this is Way Down Upon Joy, and she has written a poem called In Southern Scenes. In southern scenes, the rivers flow. In lazy swirls, they catch the glow of suns and moons or starry skies. And yet dark waters off the skies, what lurks unnoticed just below. In southern towns, the people go to worship God. But don't you know, you see what hides behind their eyes in southern scenes. Should equal mean it's just a show when white greets black in status quo, and yet I sense that friendship's guise define intent with compromise. Watched fields of cotton come and go in southern scenes. End poem. Okay, thanks so much, Laurent. So let's start with Kel, if we can. What did you think of the poem?
Oh, I liked it. It's got a really awesome rhyme base, and the flow is really fantastic. I love the wording. You know, it's got a really dark, hidden undertones to it. So it's really well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Bobby, what were your thoughts?
Once I got over thinking about In Flanders Fields, which was the first thing that hit my mind, because, of course, both are rondos, but she did such a superb job with this. Being of brevity, it's got such a it's so impactful. I liked the fact that she turned the last line in the second and third stanza into a refrain. But she's got such a powerful message in such a compact, economical write. Very, very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Should equal mean it's just a show when white greets black in status quo? And yet I sense that friendship's guise defied intents and compromise. Watched fields of cotton come and go in southern scenes. The poet brings to light the constant tension that exists between races in the South, not uniquely. There is beauty in the land they inhabit. There is fear of God in the church they attend. And these are all southern scenes, but watched fields of cotton is the enduring image. Very powerful piece.
Absolutely great comment, and great comments all around. I too thought this was a very strong speaking of truth to old Southern power structure, driven eloquently home by her skilled lyricism. And boy, just a pleasure to read. It just, you know, the lines just roll off your tongue when you're intoning this aloud, which is what, you know, be honest, I mean, that's what poetry is all about. It's a spoken art form. So very well done. And with that, let's go on to our next piece, if we can, Laurent.
All right, our next reader is Pam, and Apprentice to Marie Laveau is up, Pam.
All right. This is Apprentice to Marie Laveau by Pam Eight, and it goes like this. I am apprentice to Marie Laveau, voodoo queen of New Orleans. I wonder how she spent her days and night. I hear her conjuring the great serpent spirit as I become filled. I see her wearing her queen of voodoo crown. Proudly, I want a taste of the queen's freedom. I am an apprentice to the great Laveau. I pretend to conjure magical beings, feeling swirling forces leading me towards endless sky. I touch far-off galaxies and then worry, will I touch the mysterious once more? I cry over the loneliness and heartache all around. I am apprentice to the Queen. I understand nothing is ever as it seems. I say that I believe this to be true. I dream of unity, connecting with love, in hopes of the healing on all levels. For the universe's many worlds, I am apprentice to the great Marie Laveau. The gossip and embellishments that surround her life were in abundance. One can never know for sure. And then, just maybe, one should just leave well enough alone. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I love this piece. I like poems that teach me new things, and this one truly fit the bill. A great story. So the photo is actually Marie's daughter masquerading as her to fool people into thinking her magic helped her defy old age, and how her daughter must have felt living in the Queen's shadow. And just a great twist that we, the reader, think the protagonist, the I, is actually the poet. In fact, the I is the daughter of Marie Laveau, and that only comes out if you know the photo or if you read the AN, if you read the author notes. So very clever piece, very well thought. And Keith, what'd you think?
Hello.
Yeah, mute.
Yeah, I unmuted myself. It was a good poem. I still haven't. I tried to get to the link on the Blogspot Radio or the.
No matter where you are on AP, if you look up at the top and see groups, you click on groups.
Yeah.
You find AP. You click on late poets. And you are right there in the room. You'll be right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's okay. And I do think we've got a caller on hold, so let me bring them on, too. 206, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Victoria. Victoria Frost.
Hi, Victoria. Welcome.
Hi.
Glad you could join
us.
Thank
you. How is everyone?
Doing great.
Good. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to warn, I do have tiny human beings running around, so they may decide to come and give their two cents, and if they do, I will try and shush them, but just forewarning.
So, Victoria, did you have a chance to hear Pam read that piece?
I did. I thought that this was really quite a stunning piece, because so often we think of, so I have a I have a friend who's a professional piercer, and she's married to a professional tattoo artist, and they have. Oh, can you guys hear me?
Oh, Victoria's talking.
We can hear you now. Yeah.
Okay. So as I was saying, I think what's really interesting about this is the idea of an apprenticeship. So often we think that an apprenticeship comes from a place of honor. And I have a friend who's a professional piercer. She's married to a professional tattoo artist. And often they will teach by apprenticeship. But often it is not because the artist is necessarily something to be aspired to, but rather someone to glean information off of. And I think what's interesting in this is that there's not really a feeling of being happy to be an apprentice of Marie Laveau. Rather, it's the burden that comes with it, because she is not able to untangle herself from that name. It's now going to impact the rest of her life. And all the rumors and all the whispers that came with it, too, are going to be attached to her, either as the daughter of or masquerading as. But her own name is never really mentioned in this poem. Her own daughter, Martha Ward, is relatively unknown because her mother, Marie Laveau, was just so grandiose, and she fell within her shadow and was never able to escape. And so it just reminds her that perhaps she shouldn't have done this. Perhaps people, if they had not been so mystified by her mother, might have been able to see beyond that one woman, because it's so overpowering that now it hits more than one generation. I think it's really quite a stunning piece. And I love even what you said after Pam finished reading it about how this isn't really the perspective of the author or the reader, but rather the perspective of the daughter who cannot escape that shadow. I think it was really quite a fantastic write.
Great comment, great insight, Victoria. Laurent, your ideas on this one?
I am apprentice. And in that sentence, the first I am is incomplete. I am Marie Laveau, even though I am apprentice to the great Marie Laveau. The gossip and embellishments that surround her life are in abundance. One can never know for sure, and then just maybe one should just leave well enough alone. The change of tense to the past in the word surrounded suggests that the phrase, I understand nothing is ever as it seems, is true. There's a mysticism of continuance, an unusually long life as part of the legend, and the poet brought both characters alive in this somewhat brooding tribute. I say brooding because I agree with Victoria. There is something of the unwilling, in her writing, so I use the word brooding to signify that. It's very skillfully accomplished.
Absolutely, great comment. And Pam, I'm going to give you as reader final word on this one.
Yeah, I really like this. One of my favorite things about this poem, and this was mentioned, is that it's educational for me. And I love having the opportunity to learn something new. Like, I did not know this about Marie Laveau's daughter. To be honest, I didn't even know she had a daughter. And I love how it has that first-person narrative, and then we learn that it is from the perspective of her daughter. And we learn about how gossip really became a part of moving her story along and making her such a grandiose figure. So I really, this is an excellent write all the way, and very well done.
Great comment. And Victoria, I should have asked this in the beginning. Do you have to read and run, or do you have some time?
I can stay for a little bit, but the littles go down at 8, so I do have to be gone by 8, but I'm here definitely for as long as I can be.
Okay. So you got that, Laurent.
No, I'm good. You ready for the next one?
Yep, we are ready for the next one.
All right, the next reader is Kel, and Kel, I'm putting up a piece by Martha Gethel for you. It's up.
So, Laurent, that one too. Cloud.
Oh, Lord. Okay. We might as well.
Okay, let me play the SoundCloud. Here we go.
The Whispering Ghost by Martha Gettle. Sadie was a slave on a plantation farm. This was right around the Civil War time. Sadie, she worked in the house so grand when South against the North took their stand. The people she worked for were not kind or nice. Sadie swore their hearts were made of ice. Many a slave was hung up and whipped, paid a terrible cost for the smallest slip. The worst of slavery in that place took its stand. Such horrors there were, man against man. But something was watching, and it did its due for all the things the slave there were put through. One day the master knocked Sadie to the floor, and the watching ghost couldn't take any more. That night the ghost took over Sadie, it's true. To change that night, there was nothing she could do. And late that night, after the master was in bed, it whispered terrible things in Sadie's head. She got some kerosene. She poured it in the house. Curtains, carpets, and furniture, all of it she doused. Then she struck a match, threw it on the floor. That grand, fancy house went up with a roar. The master now, he never made it out. No one ever knew how the fire came about. Now the big, grand, fancy house is gone, and all the poor slaves, they have moved on. They say when the wind blows through there, you can hear the master's whip cracking through the air.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Martha. Great job. Okay, so let's get some comments. If we can start with Bobby, what do you think?
Martha always seems to use couplets, and she uses them with such skill. This is great storytelling with a great rhythm to it. It flows so very wonderfully with the cadence. It tells a superb storytelling, great elegance and suspense, and I really like what she's done with this.
Absolutely, great comment. Yeah, I too really like this. Classic storytelling poem, retribution against the evils inherent in the antebellum South, a really strong ad for our night of Southern Gothic. Well done. Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, it was a story, perhaps, but how many enslaved people have been pushed to that extreme? Adding the ghost offers the mysticism required in such a tale of karma. But the story is not over. As the poet says, all the poor slaves, they have moved on, perhaps for the better or for the worse. No shortages of whips, I understand. Well done, Martha.
Absolutely. And Cal, I'm going to give you final word on this piece. What do you think?
Well, I thought it was an amazing story with an awful lot of horrendous truth behind it. You know, because back then, the story is basically true. You know, the way things were, the way the slaves were treated and everything. And, you know, the fact that one of them gets their comeback, that's pretty flipping awesome. But, yeah, I agree with everybody. This is a very well-written poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Laurent, for our next one.
Certainly. I'll try and pick one that is not does not have a SoundCloud. All right. Bobby, you're our next reader. And if you would be so kind, I'm putting up a piece by Nick Baker.
I can do that. I don't even need a reason. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you a reason.
All right. Hi. You win. Nick Baker, The Devil Lives Here. The devil lives here and found him with my own damn eyes. Upon his head he wears a crown. I've heard his laugh. I've heard his lies. I saw him on a Sunday morn. He slithered through the dewy grass and in the fields, a cutting corn. I saw him taking Bible class. I saw him on a jet-black steed. I saw him on a limping mule. I saw him drink. I saw him feed. I saw him on a milking stool. I saw him when the hammer fell. I saw him swinging in the noose. You can't consign him back to hell. They cut him down and let him loose. The devil lives in this damn place. I've seen with these eyes of brown, he wore a smile upon his face as he went riding into town. and poem.
Well read.
Great read, Bobby. And Victoria, if we can start comments off with you, what do you think?
Absolutely. Excuse me. I think that this was really quite fun. The idea that they chose to go with a rhyme scheme to tell the tale of the devil and all the ways in which he's found himself within this place. The idea that he's lurking at Bible classes, that he's being hung and they're cutting him loose. The fact that he's finding a spot everywhere, it really falls into the old Christian belief of fire and brimstone, that he's lurking, waiting, watching, just taking his time to tempt you away from the righteous path. And once you fall, you will be as condemned as he, though death will take you and it will not him. I think that this really is quite a fun piece. And it reminds me of the old, almost like The Devil Went Down to Georgia, the play of rhyme really gives a almost childish feel to it, which fits well with the warning. They want something that's easy to remember that might just get stuck in your head, and this sticks with you, that rhyme scheme pulling you along, and even the little jests of obscenities. I think it's just really quite fantastic.
Absolutely. You know, I was thinking the same thing, that the devil in both of the subcultures, the white subculture, Devil Went Down to Georgia, as well as the African-American Southern subculture, you know, Me and the Devil, or The Devil at the Crossroads, you know, all those Robert Johnson blues songs just struck me. And I thought it was a wonderfully lyrical, dark rite that hints that a lot of Southern Gothic genre references the Bible, the noose, the agrarian tropes, and like you stated, Victoria, the devil himself. Great Southern Gothic favorite. And Pam, what'd you think?
I really like this. I always enjoy Nick Baker's poetry. It's got wonderful rhyme and flow. And the metered rhyme, I have to agree, does kind of add like a not childish and is immature, but almost this sense of innocence to it, or it softens it a bit. And yet the darkness is also quite obvious. And what I really like about this is that it connects well with the intro you had in the beginning, where it said often characters have a duplicity to them. I know I'm paraphrasing, but like the preacher, and with that second stanza, I saw him on a Sunday morn. He slithered through the dewy grass, and in the fields cutting corn, I saw him taking Bible class. You know, those are wonderful lines expressing the duality or the unexpected of who or what we think evil and good are. So excellent write and very well done.
Great insight. You guys are kind of knocking the ball out of the park tonight. Laurence, I'm going to give you final word on this Nick Baker poem. What did you think of it?
Let me get right back to it. Where am I here? Oh, wonderful. My comment was actually fairly brief, because the poem is fairly brief, but I said the devil lives in all of us, wherever we live. It's a great brevity that gives one pause at all the implications. Great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, and with that, we're ready for our next one.
All right. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to Victoria's poem, because she's short on time, and that's up, Victoria.
Awesome. I am going to warn, I do have my youngest now in the room with me, so you may hear her having fun in the background. But this is Spirits of the Southern Plantation. How might the dead come creeping, crawling, clawing their way out of dusty corners where they linger unwilling to release their grasp of a handful of sand from times gone by. Even the whitewashed plantation sits abandoned on a hill, the black cracks of decay bleeding through the surface, creaking with each rain in protest of its growing aches. Neglected oaks have grown an old man's beard, shuddering their overgrown arms that sprawl out. Vain attempts to remain grounded in the majesty they once bore, the weight of it now crushing, unappreciated. Within this canopy-created cave, unseen eyes watch from pale apparitions behind the black bark trunks held at bay by the angels that keep threadbare tires from skidding, pushing stuck cars out of mud-filled potholes, left as nature's trap for the wayward wanderer who dares disturb the souls trapped in the grip of their old master's abode, waiting for a chance to regain their pound of flesh from the back that disrespects their dwelling, reeking of their labored tobacco harvest and the honey bourbon sipped upon by the posh proprietor. Ghostly jazz permeates the shadowy corners of the house, luring the heedless revelers just a bit further into the gaping mouth of the abyss that swallows light, leaving naught but their silhouette from backlit windows, devouring them, breathless, in the timeless magnolia and entwining them in the new master's web, where they make their penance in lupine fields, and their phantasmal groan is lost to the rolling thunder, whose wind shudders the ancient oak, sways his growing beard within the breeze as he rests his arms from the burden of his once-lived majesty, and the old plantation creaks from humid air and raindrops. End poem.
Wow. This one is, it really is breathtaking. And hearing you read it takes it to another level. There were so many stanzas that struck out that it was tough to pick one. But I chose to highlight waiting for a chance to regain their pound of flesh from the back that disrespects their dwelling, reeking of their labored tobacco harvest and the honey bourbon sipped upon by the posh proctor. So we asked for Southern Gothic tonight, and this poem really did deliver a knockout punch. The pained legacy dripped long and hard from each stanza. It was just a fabulous piece. I don't know. At a certain point, you know, a piece of art kind of loses its ability to be critiqued when it gets to that kind of, like, I know James Joyce called it I actually call it a fortunate rhythm, but he called it, the term he used is escaping me, but it's when the artist kind of reaches those sublime levels where it's almost like a spiritual channeling of something beyond the conscious mind. And I kind of felt like this piece did that for me. So I really appreciate you bringing it to us.
I really appreciate the prompt. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. So we'll get you some comments. So Bobby, what'd you think?
I thought this was stunning visual imagery to place the reader directly amidst the plantation's grounds and the population, devouring them breathless in the timeless magnolia and entwining them in the new master's web where they make their penance in lupine fields and their phantasmal groan is lost in the rolling thunder. And I heard the rolling thunder and the groan and the pain and the age of the plantation and its inhabitants inhabit this piece and permeated the reading. And I thought the reading was superb despite the editorial comments by both the child and the dog.
Thank you, Bobby.
Well done, Bobby. Cal, what'd you think?
I thought it was a fantastic picture in words. Absolutely wonderful. The imagery is just stunning. Ghostly jazz permeates the shadowy corners of the house, luring the heedless revelers just a bit further. into the gaping mouths of the abyss. The swallows light, leaving naught but their silhouette from backlit windows. This is just absolutely fantastic. And it just drips Southern goth so well. You know, the jazz and the plantation and the ivy and the moss, everything is just really, it's all there. Absolutely wonderful, Victoria.
Thank you, Cal. I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Cal. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, my goodness. This is amazing and a well-deserved front page pick. Congratulations on that, Victoria. I really like how this is such epic storytelling that you imagery, and in just the kind of details that really grab your attention. Waiting for a chance to regain their flesh from the back that disrespects their dwelling, reeking of their labor to tobacco harvest, and then into the gaping mouth of this that swallows the light. And I like devouring them breathless in the time folia. Your imagery and the way you describe the rundown plantation, the plantation, the land itself, really becomes part of the story. I know it. I don't think it's considered Southern Gothic, but it reminds me very much how with Gone in the Wind, Gone with the Wind, the plantation, the land, it all was as important of a character in the story and to the storyline as the people themselves. And that's what I feel like with this, right, is how important you made that and how important you made the inhabitants of that land. So just a powerful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam, for that stunning comment. I really, really appreciate that.
Absolutely, Pam. Great. And Laurence, I'm going to give you final word.
Devouring them, breathless in the timeless magnolia, and entwining them in the new master's web, where they make their penance in lupine fields, and their phantasmal groan is lost in the rolling thunder. Victoria, regardless of prompt, you always rise to the occasion. What a vision. Your metaphors entrance, and your poetics beguile. Despite a dark subject, it's lovely work.
Thank you, Laurent.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, Laurent, I am actually pulling it back to you for our next poem.
All right. I'd like to ask Keith if he's found the room and found the links.
I have not. You asked if I had a paid membership. I do, but it's on an account that I lost years ago. I lost my email address, so I don't know if on the unpaid membership.
All right. I was going to ask you to read the next piece, but barring that, what we're going to do at this point is move back up to the top of the page, and we're going to begin with the personal rights. And if I can find yours, Richard, I'm going to put it up for you to read.
Okay.
There it is. Okay.
Okay. Let me see.
Grab when you see it, you will be all set. There it goes.
Okay, I do see it. Okay. So this one. Oops. Sorry about that. Let me unplug. There we go. So this one's called Sounding of the West Wind. Spanish moss still necklaces them timeless piney trees, our footfalls ever hushed by fallen needles and palm leaves, carpet and red clay, bound the faded white wooden face of that frayed big house we'd hush, like Granny Freeman learned us when we was youngins. Still recall them moony nights, back of my neck, tingling from pain shrieks swept up on the west wind. Not real, not hush, child, a spirit's foot. my little head shook. Seen her? Black core, my eyes wider, wider, as dull gray mist took shape of Granny's granny, pained wailing, cotton slave rags draped round her child-bearing hips. Behind her come Mistress Davis, tight-laced in black mourning, her pale ghost low-rasping, your godless hoodoo spell. I know your claims of stolen virtue, but my husband is dead, Ruthie. Down to Ruthie's rusted chains, a clank, clank, clanking. No, mistress, ma'am, I ain't hexed neither man or beast. That dark evil's been done on me. Up come the mistress's horseback paddy rowler. Drag Granny's granny along that dusty fall path, ties her anger-fisted, shackled hands to the splintery post, his whip cracking against her ghosted backside. Tears well up as Ruthie's head shook. Ain't never hexed moss to Davis. He withered by the Lord's hand. Ruthie unfisted graveyard dust into that howling west wind. But Christ for my witness, I curse y'all, mistress. Y'all and all yawn for this evil. A thunderclap echoed through till this world twisted downways up. And damned if old mistress twerent shackled to that whipping post. I half whispered, always been this way? Granny's face broke deep inside while the west wind painted us in rain. End poem.
That was a performance. Damn. You really brought that to life, my friend. Great read. Dialogue is what brings this piece to life. Dialogue that is true to my ear for the characters represented. Dialogue that insinuates itself into our belief system and allows how it's all possible. Writing like this requires an ability to inhabit a persona not our own and channel a lifetime of reading as a runner towards authenticity. While I enjoyed the whole piece, lost in the patois and slang of the time, these particular lines stopped me for an immediate reread. No, mistress, ma'am, I ain't hexed, neither man or beast. Spite dark evil's been done to me. Up come the mistress's horseback paddy roller. He dragged Granny's granny along that dusty fall path. And you know, you read it so much better than me that I'm not going to read the rest of it, but that stanza I thought was absolutely gripping, along with everything else. I think you made your bones with this one, brother. Bravo.
Thanks for the help.
Pam, could you comment, please?
Oh, I would be happy to. Yeah, I have to agree. That was just an outstanding performance. And I like how well you balance out and use the dialogue. And through their words, through their actions, we get to know each character and the struggles that they're going through. And this is one of those hard-hitting rites that deals with a difficult topic. And that's an important thing for poetry. I think as poets, as writers, that is one of our duties is to put the difficult out there. And, you know, I really just am learning. Like, I didn't even know until you ran your contest, like, that Southern Gothic was a separate thing. And so I'm really just learning about it. I mean, I think a stellar example of how it deals with social issues and with people who are going through difficult times. And I really like your goose spell. I know your clinkers, but dead Ruthie, sound of Ruthie's rusted chain, a clink, clink, clanking. Nah, mistress, ma'am, I ain't hex neither man or beast. Spite dark evil's been done on me. There's the struggle of a main character who is being accused of evil. They're the one to turn the other cheek. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Ben. Excellent comment. And, Raquel, could you comment, please?
Wow. Absolutely fantastic. Beautiful writing all the way through, Richard. The dialogue and the language was spot on. I mean, I can imagine like watching a film, you know, and hearing the old Southern language of the folk, and, you know, it's put me right there in the scene. You know, I could see everything that was going on just like I was watching a movie. It's just absolutely beautiful. Wonderful work.
Thank you very much, Cal. That was a great comment. And Bobby, please, your comment.
Expletives fail me. This is a stunning piece. Stunning piece. The characters and the read inhabit the piece. I think someone already quoted this passage, but now, mistress, ma'am, I hex ned van the beast, despite Jock Evil's been done on me. Up come the mistress horseback paddle, paddy roller, and as the tears welled up as Ruthie's head shook, ain't never hexed Massa Davis. He withered by loud hand, and brutal truths are communicated with spellbinding storytelling. This piece is incomparable.
Thank you, Bobby. That was wonderfully said.
Thanks so much.
Victoria, have you left us yet?
I'm still here for one more comment.
Well, you got it, babe.
So I think what's quite marvelous about this is that there's a deep thread of inhumanity woven into this. I have to wonder, the first few lines, Spanish moss, still necklaces them timeless piney trees, are footfalls ever hushed? I have to wonder if that necklace is not just moss and perhaps old hanging rope that's never been quite taken down. That we worry that ghosts hang from. And then, of course, we're walked through this story of a mistress who is accusing perhaps a servant that they fear has hexed them. Whether they have or have not, back in that time, it might as well have been if it was believed. As soon as something could be accused, it was. And so through this whole thing, you have this servant, this maid, who is essentially proving to justify herself without right telling her mistress, no, I didn't do this, until finally at the end she is kind of forced to. I didn't curse y'all, mistress. Y'all and all urine with this evil. It's a reminder of the inhumanity that was perpetrated against these people in a culture. I actually used to live in Mansfield, where the last hanging tree in the United States was finally cut down. And I remember driving by it, and there's an eerie air to it, because you know the amount of souls that were put upon it and whipped and beat and hung, and often all because they just upset the person in charge. And this poem really brings that story to life in a stunning way that is almost horrifying to watch, because we often don't like to think people don't act this way, but we did for a very long time. So this is just fantastic.
Victoria, thank you for that wonderful comment. Sorry, Richard. I want to thank you for stopping by. Despite the fact that your time is limited, you made an impact, and thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. You have a wonderful
Absolutely.
Night, everyone.
You too. Thank
and
you
Keith,
again
I hate
for
to keep
us.
Skipping you.
Yeah.
Did you want to say anything about this poem?
It was very good. It was very well written. I'll be better. I won't apologize. I'll be better at commenting next time. I'll get the links together so I can read this while we're listening to it. I want to apologize to everybody for not being able to take part in this more than I have.
No problem. It's interesting. Interesting. It's pleasant to hear a new voice. So welcome on that. And if you have any questions about how everything works, physically, give me a buzz.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure that you're up to snuff. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, we've all been there. It's a little overwhelming
every time
you call in.
Yeah, I'll
so,
get much better
with
as I go.
That, absolutely. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Laurent, for our next one.
All right. As usual, I'm going to follow you, Richard. It's kind of a tradition, I guess. Speaking of tradition.
Absolutely.
That's the name of this poem. Tradition. The house was an evil piece of architecture, dilapidated antebellum shedding paint and white curls and splits from its weathered, sagging walls. An open porch extended in a horseshoe around the front and down both sides of the old plantation home, mostly overgrown by blackberry brambles and weeds. The front door looked substantial, solid, an oddity in contrast of conditions to the canted structure. A wisp of gray smoke drifted from the ramshackle brick chimney. Anyone would tell you it should have fallen long ago, but it hadn't. Still hanging on by tradition, gamely, a fair representation of much around it. If you could be that fly on the wall inside, you would observe the schizophrenic troika that had somehow formed as family. Today was Bobby Bergeron's 19th birthday, and he came well prepared with a pocket full of scams and intimidation to brighten up Halloween. His father, an out-of-work tinware salesman, who fancied himself a genteel Shakespearean poet of the Southern School, is emoting. Father to his son. What delicious scheme lies behind those eyes? Your smile suppressed, you're early dressed, you're off, to no surprise. What are you about to be guilty of, I wonder? Which innocent will suffer as you extract your little plunder? Have you the wit not to blunder? Hide the lightning, use the thunder. By voice accomplish much, veil the threat. Growl a bear instead. Mother to her son. Now, boy, you gotta control your impulses. Don't be like a great uncle, Jack Bouchard. The poor man had no peace if he wasn't beating someone up. So they locked him away. Jail killed him. I knew it would. It'll kill you, too. Transmogrify my angel. Won't have it. None of it. Son, don't go no further than a little bullion to get the scratch we need. Them state boys in blue and gold gone bloodhound on us. Ain't paying attention to ancestral lines or who's your neighbor or nothing. So, don't crack no heads. I don't know when it came open season on us. Shit and Shinola, they sniffing in smaller circles. Damn clowns stumbling around, getting they self bit by snakes. They ain't gonna find no illegal stills. Leastways not here. Don't be late. Chicken dinner and pumpkin pie. Bobby mumbles unintelligibly and turns to go. His father had lectured often. The tradition demanded he find some soft Yankee tourists and help advance their natural inclinations towards reparations for the evil the carpetbaggers inflicted on Southerners after the Civil War, revenge for the brutal rape of the South. Too bad about Mama and Heads, he thought. He'd learned to crack them like pumpkins, but they made such a mess. Whistling, he set out on his favorite day, ready to practice his own unique form of trick-or-treat, Bergeron style. End poem.
Bravo. Boy, that is one amazing read. I read this a couple of times. And I read it aloud, but to hear you read it, it just took it to a whole other level. Sitting here in front of my computer just smiling. It is truly a stunning piece of Southern Gothic prose poetry, showcasing broken characters, faded glory, the dilapidated Southern plantation. I originally wrote much like a Tennessee Williams play, and although that's true, when you read it, I really heard Faulkner in there as well. The reason why I said a Tennessee Williams play is in his work, The Broken Mind is front and center, and it makes this Halloween tale of yours more frightening than any supernatural occurrence or supernatural being ever could. The smashing pumpkins and the smashing heads. It's just fabulous work, Laurent. Amazing.
Thank you, my friend.
Absolutely. Let's get you some comments. Let's start, if we can, with Cal. What'd you think?
Well, like yours, Richard, I loved the language. The story he tells is just fantastic. The father and the mother berating their son, you know, be careful, don't get into any damn trouble. You know, and it's just really, really fantastic. I love the visuals of the plantation. And it was just really, really stunning work, Gallant. Very stunning.
Thank you, Cal.
Absolutely. Great, great insight. And Bobby, your thoughts?
I agree with you. I heard Faulkner in there. I read Faulkner in high school. I found him deeply disturbing. a great storyteller. The broken mind is definitely center Faulkner's writings. And I thought the storytelling in this was superb. Well read, well written, well done.
Thank you, Bobby.
Great comment, Bobby. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is just absolutely brilliant storytelling. And I like how you have the dynamics of the characters and the family dynamics between father and son and mother and son. And I like how you give us a main character who is very determined to be his own self and having a lot of trouble listening to the wisdom of those who have gone through and the fears that they want to keep, you know, the danger that they want to keep him away from. I like how you add in the little elements like, you know, the chicken dinner and pumpkin pie that really speak of family tradition. And I really like, if you could be that fly on the wall inside, you would observe the schizophrenic troika that had somehow formed as family. Just absolutely a brilliant write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Thanks, Pam. I guess we'll move on from here. Where would you like to go, Laurent?
Well, as soon as I locate Pam's piece.
Okay.
Pam, you are up next. And your piece is up.
All right. I will say I wish I had an opportunity to do more research. I certainly didn't realize the complex layers of Southern Gothic. With all that said, this is what I came up with. And this is the GOAT. And it goes like this. Nobody celebrated the arrival of Sudden May Brevard. It had been a brutal year for crops, and with seven children and three generations to care for, there weren't no joy to be found in the birth of another girl child. But truth be told, she could have won them all over as she grew into a charming and delightful child, except the damn three-headed goat. As soon as Sutton was able to form words, she had given that goat the name of Bubba Angel. And as soon as she was able to take firm steps on her cherub legs, she was constantly by the beast's side. Bubba Angel had been delivered by the oldest brother and made his first bleat just as Sutton had squirmed into the firm, steady hands of the midwife. Pa and Granddad, upon seeing the monstrosity and the dead nanny goat, had declared it a product of Lucifer himself. And while Mother didn't disagree with their decision to put a bullet in its heart, her reasoning was more of a practical rationality than her husband's superstitious kin. Near to 20 years ago, before settling down with Lenny Bavard and his overseas family, Lucille had been a bright and independent woman studying animal husbandry in college. No doubt the animal wouldn't live long and no skin off her back, as it certainly wouldn't be of any use for the making of the goat cheese that they sold to locals and tourists. The menfolk grumbled and ranted, as menfolk do who have declared war, as menfolk who have declared war often do. But in the end, it was Grandmere, the family matron, who had the final say in the matter. "Y'all are being a bunch of fools," she had chastised them. "You sure as hell ain't going to kill that there kid. There's a reason the good Lord saw fit for him to be born the same hour as that baby girl." The routine of life on a working farm continued slow and steady rotation as the infant was quickly developing self-preservation and a strong latch on her mother's worn-out nipples. Grandmere Rue put herself in charge of caring for the young billy goat, offering it fresh milk with doses of herbs picked from the garden and a good-sized portion of prayer. One day, Lucille's oldest daughter said to her, "Don't you think it a bit odd and creepy the name Sutton gave that there cloven-hoofed son of Cain?" Lucille stopped her sweeping to give her daughter a no-nonsense look. "I'm too busy taking care of my own business to give thought to such silliness." "But, Mama, don't you remember? About a year before Sutton was born, you had that baby boy that died, and you named him Bubba." "Of course I remember," Lucille retorted. "A mother doesn't forget a son that died in her arms. Bubba is a common name in these parts, and there is no use in wasting an uncommon name on a dying child. Now get back to work and stop wasting your thoughts on that hokey mumbo-jumbo." Rue was looking out the window at Sutton, giggling and whispering to an attentive and hungry Bubba Angel, spoke up. "Lucille, you think every answer and every blessing comes from science, but mark my words, those girls of yours, they both have a gift. It don't come from science and it don't come from schooling. And if you keep being too pig-headed to see the truth, you'll eventually be wearing the scars of your own ignorance." Sutton knew without hearing a word that Mama and Grandmere were arguing about her, Pearl, and God. "I love you, Bubba Angel. Thank you for being my best friend," Bubba bleated, casting a quick six-eyed glance towards the old farmhouse. For the time being, he was content to chew on the grass and stay by the girl's side. For the time being, trouble kept itself at a proper distance, and evil waited to strike, always content with prey that made for easier pickings. End poem.
So, Pam, that was really wonderful. Just a very strong storytelling, right? And, you know, you were a bit apologetic before the read, but I think that this, you nailed the macabre and the kind of rural, agrarian, southern Gothic tradition. Lots of spooky food for thought throughout. I especially liked the "Mama, don't you remember about a year before Sutton was born, you had that baby boy that died and you named him Bubba." Of course I remember, Lucille retorted. A mother doesn't forget a son that died in her arms. Bub is a common name in these parts, and there's no use wasting an uncommon name on a dying child. Now get back to work and stop wasting your thoughts on that hokey mumbo-jumbo. So, boy, there's lots of writers, you know, I think certainly Question the Colors and lots of Southern Gothic that kind of reminded me of. So I thought you really nailed it. Great job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And let's get you some other comments. Bobby, your thoughts.
Well, I thought this was stunning storytelling, imaginative, clever, detail-oriented, powerfully and captivatingly told, with a macabre fascination in the dialogue. And the portion that you just said, you just cited, Mama, don't you remember about a year ago before something was born, you had that baby boy that you died named Bubba. That whole conversation there draws you in. The reader invests themselves in this story and its outcome and wonders how the whole tale transpires, and to Pam's eternal credit, doesn't give us a solid ending. It leaves it to the reader's imagination, and with that, I applaud you endingly.
Thank you, Bobby.
Absolutely. Great point, Bobby. Yeah, a lot to be said for ambiguity in the genre. And Laurent, your thoughts? Are you on mute?
Laurent, your thoughts?
Yes, I'm on mute. Sorry. I will burn a candle in honor of each of you. Trust me. I like the way that people used to look at pretty innocent things, birth defects, vegetables, for that matter. I mean, take the tomato. The tomato, for a long time, was classified as the poison apple. It was thought that aristocrats got sick and died after eating it. But the truth was that the wealthy used pewter plates, which were high in lead content. You marry that with the acidity in tomatoes, and you got death from lead poisoning. So here we are with a three-headed goat. Many of the people are suspicious of that three-headed goat. But Grammys says no. There's a significance to when it was born. The same birthday as our lovely angel. So when you come to that last, Bubba bleated, casting a quick six-eyed glance towards the old farmhouse. For the time being, he was content to chew on grass and stay by the girl's side. For the time being, trouble kept itself at a proper distance, and evil waited to strike, always content with prey that made for easy pickings. And I thought to myself, oh my, I was afraid of that. Those damn easy pickings. Who took such good care of you, too? I wasn't ready for the evil, Pam. Somehow I thought good was going to manifest itself. But I thought it was a great write.
Thank you, Laurent.
Great comment, Laurent. And Cal, your thoughts?
Oh, golly, this is fantastic all the way through. What a wonderful story. It just captivates your imagination. You get lost in the dialogue and the imagery, and just the basic story. And then, like Laurent said, you get to that end, and you're like, holy shit. Wow, really? It's going to come to that, right? Yeah, I love a surprise ending, and that definitely was one. The language was wonderful. The dialogue, you know, everything from beginning to end, it was just a really fantastic visual write. Truly enjoyed it.
Thank you, Kel.
Great comment, Kel. Okay, and with that, we're ready for our next one, whenever you're Freddie Morales.
Actually, our next one is for our last voice, Cal. Your piece is up. Give it a read.
All righty. Hidden in swamp moss, Cal smiles. Deep in the swamps near Lafayette, a rundown shack was nearly obscured by the Spanish mosses hanging blue from the cypress trees' dank allure, spidery limbs walking in the murk, gnarled trunks leaning back and forth, laden with heavy filamentous moss. Cackling hoots resonates through mist, drowned out by dirges of Creole verses, echoes over wetlands' archaic bog, as in disembodied distances rank fog, sound deafening as deadly curses. A crocodile roar breaks the silence, huge jaws cracked, missing flown kill. Cook, 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 croaked an egret's flight, avoiding death snap with elegant skills. A cackling cacophony through the mist, gleeful at the croc's fortunate miss. Cajun Acadian, well known as a witch by Lafayette folks up the river's coast. Looking the part in ragged patchwork, tangled black brackish hair strung out, rail thin as a matchstick, a bony sprout, voice harsh as a chimney's choked throat. Her shack grew out of the swamp's fog, jointed and as irascible as herself was. That thatch, thatch, gilded in bygone rot, held together by cypress' leisurely arms. Creole tales of her confounding ways, her crude voice and the stringent displays, known only as Granny, name of Maeve, a witch or voodoo, inbred Cajun strain. Folks who claim to believe her insane trade tales of exploiting the waterways in the foggy mist under the moss's lace, hidden from the veil, the wildlife wails. No one dares reproach or approach her, frightened of receiving a haunted curse, which most knew as a crocodile's roar, or the cook, cook, cook as a negret sword. End poem.
Great cow. Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was just stunning. And your read really brought it to life as well. Stunning, which is true, skillfully mixes the terrors of the bayou with your protagonist, Maeve, and her weaving of swampy environments for her voodoo curses. Just perfect spooky Halloween Southern Gothic ride. Great job.
Thank you, Richard.
Absolutely. Let's get you some more comments. Pam, your comment.
Well, first of all, congratulations on it being a pending pick. I have to say that this really has spot-on meter. Like, I noticed the rhyme is a mixture of, end rhyme and end rhyme that's near, that it's kind of an off kilter rhyme in some parts, and yet it flows so beautifully. I like how well you use the imagery, but not only the imagery, but the sound, like the cup, 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 croaked in egret's flight, avoiding that snap with elegant skill. I like how you create this atmosphere by into the swamp, but you don't. It's really wonderful how subtle this is, because you don't bring us into a swamp where, say, you know, you're right there is the human characters immediately. You bring us into the swamp where the moss, this crocodile, the egret, and all that surround this area are a part of the story. And I really like this all the way through, but I do like what you say, looking the part in ragged patchwork, tingle black, brackish hair strung out, rail thin as matchstick bony spread, voice harsh as chimney choked throat. And I also like steel tales of her confounding ways, her crude voice, and astringent displays. That flowed really beautifully, and I like how you introduce us to that mysterious character. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I love the descriptions and atmospherics in this fine piece, particularly her shack grew out of the swamp's fog, jointed and irascible as she herself was, patched, thatched, stilted in bygone rot, held together by cypress leisurely arms. You have a real knack for painting with words, my friend. This is a thoroughly enjoyable read, and I particularly do like your rhyming, both end rhymes, interior rhymes, and near rhymes. It was really well done.
Thank you, Laurent.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Bobby, I'm going to give you final word on this piece.
I feel such weight in person and responsibility. Great storytelling. I think it's by elegant descriptions of nature. A crocodile roar breaks the silence. Huge jaws crack. Missing flown kill. The whole passage there, the assonance that you use that threads throughout the piece is so elegantly and subtly done and very pleasing to the read and reader. And I'm glad the previous commenters noticed that assonance and made mention of it. It's wonderfully descriptive, atmospherics, and of description, and ending with nature, wonderfully bookends a terrific story.
Thank you, Bobby.
Great insights, Bobby. Thanks so much. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you, Laurent, for the next one.
And speaking of Bobby, it is your turn to shine, dear.
Why did I know you were going to throw that at me?
Because you were next in line, not for any other reason.
Does anyone have any idea of the power of next? I think I'm going to write a verse on that.
How about the power of last?
The power of next. Okay. I wrote a piece called Midnight in the Murder House, and I'm going to preface it with apologies. The author is a Polish kid from Chicago. I'm going to do my best with a Louisiana accent, only because I dated a guy from Shreveport, and my uncle was stationed at South Camp Polk, Louisiana, and my father was a great storyteller. So hopefully somewhere in there I will be able to capture maybe some of this. Anyway, murder. Midnight in the Murder House. Granny used to say that young and foolish is one word, and if it ain't, it did it ought to be. Coming up, we was always told that stay the heck away from that deserted old gray house down by the bayou. You youngins ain't got no business being in it. Anywhere near that blasted place, besides that, it's a murder house. Granny would admonish us. The whole Carlisle family was killed in there. We thought that was just Granny being Granny. And everybody knows that for young'uns, there ain't no more powerful draw than to be told to stay away from something. There being a full moon that night, we figured we wasn't going to need no flashlights. So off we went on our old Hallows adventure, sneaking over to the old Carlisle place at midnight. It stood out there. The edge of the bayou, the busted windows staring out vacant. We saw the front door was a gate beckoning us, and we crossed the threshold into the tantalizing darkness, listening for the tricks that the quiet plays on straining ears, the odd noises seeping faint from decay and ruin, us repeating the stories we heard about that Ocala place. We whispered our way from room to room. It didn't take long for that old house to sense our invasion. We all of a sudden froze, hearing floorboards creaking above us. Malignant house getting ready to pounce. We heard a footfall on the porch by something unseen shuffling forward, sounding of heavy chains dragging a swamp trick. Seeping us from rotten boards, maybe. The voice from the crumbling house, maybe, but no, we heard it. And then we seen it. Raggedy black man, chained, dressed in tatters, rays of smoke like pointing at us. Ray's voice growled haltingly, "Y'all will pay for my pain." Well, we didn't wait no till no more. We run like hell. Our dad's front door falling, tripping all over one another, screaming blue murder the whole way. Granny used to say, young and foolish is one word, and if it ain't then it ought to be. Granny sure was right. Tim Carlisle, ain't all the way dead.
Wow. You really brought that to life, Bobby. Awesome. So I read this before you read it on the air and thought then it was a great storytelling Halloween poem in the Southern Gothic tradition by way of the bayou. And I could see those youngins in that haunted plantation. And there's nothing spookier than little kids in a haunted domain getting the heck scared out of them. And you really brought that. And, you know, and you telegraphed it right from the beginning of the story, too. And it still scared the heck out of us. So great job.
Thank you.
And absolutely. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, for some reason, after I read this, I gave Bobby a kind of a cut-and-dried statement, a comment. I said, "You have quite the imagination, Bobby. You write with flair and confidence, telling a powerful story, pulling no punches." And I left it at that, thinking that I might comment more once I'd heard her read it. Well, I obviously waited for the right thing because, as Richard said, you indeed brought that alive. You threw yourself into that. I can't possibly emulate the accent, but, well, we didn't wait to hear more. We're running like hell out that front door, falling, tripping all over one another, screaming blue murder the whole way. While it doesn't look, I don't want to say this wrong, while it doesn't look altogether real, reading it, it absolutely becomes real when you read it. And that's probably not a bad thing for a piece that's probably written as a performance piece, because you smooth it out when you read it really, really well, and it flows, and it flows beautifully. You should be proud of yourself, Bobby.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Kel, your thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. This is amazing and absolutely epic ghost story. I'm telling you. I enjoyed it all the way through. I loved the passion you put into it and your speaking. And the colloquial language was really excellent. It was also really, really funny. You know, there's a sense of amusement in the end where they're tripping over each other to get out, because I can actually see this bunch of kids trying to get out of this house, and they can't go fast enough, scared up out of their wits. So it was really, really an epic tale. I loved it.
I got to say, I had fun reading it.
I can tell.
My I have to pay an homage. My father was a storyteller, and I learned very early on when he would throw himself body and soul into a story, that there was no finer way to tell a story than to become a part of it.
Wise words.
Yeah. Very true. And Cam, we're going to give you final word.
I really, first of all, enjoyed the performance. I have to say, as a fellow Midwest woman, the fact that you took on an accent that was not naturally your own, I say kudos to that. It made it just twice as entertaining. This is a wonderful tale. It, great imagination, epic. I like how you bring us into the thoughts of the characters. And I have to agree with Cal, there's definitely that nice touch of humor to it. I really appreciate this, and it's very well done.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. And with that, we're bringing it back to you, Laurent.
Well, we have come back to the top of the page, Richard, and that means you are going to read Mad Lad.
Okay. Always a challenge, but he is a great poet, so I will do my best. Okay, this one is called Necrocracy. The tenth hand of the Mother Goddess holds me up close against her bulging bosom, a newborn silkworm wriggling in excitement, and 20,000 some hundred feet below, haphazard ant dots copulate with practiced precision in regulated positions, jumping grids only to confirm the alinearity of the zigzag graph plate. As uniformed vermin, merchant intellectuals disengage from their sticky pickle of a conversation to swap the pulse in their ovaries for out-of-date bargaining tokens. In the civilization of commercial corruption, the closest comparison to death is life. If the dead don't talk, how come deadlines have consequences? Revisiting your thumbprint on the master clock shoulder handle, you pass through the leg of a tunnel, over the chest of a table, and into a cup's lazy tummy before a pair of limping lips collapse and seal the space between you and me. I've been dead for far too long, but now is not the time to wait. When words and articulate speech can turn, can truth be verbalized only through lies? I put forth my hands towards the mirror to pull my self-image out of its inverse captivity, but stop at the crystal gaze of the reflecting surface, aborting a sigh at my twitching knees. One of us lost all our innocence at birth, zero dream. I am a working beggar, a thief of thrown-away morsels of rubber tubes stuffed with malignant teeth parts. My throat is an open fissure, my skin the termite's PlayStation, and my lungs garnished with hooker's phlegm. Yet you traipse over my exposed nails, laughing at the nudity of my tongue's plumage, and I glue my lashes to the brows not to miss a blink of your glass guillotine kindness. But fear the flame liquor's resurgence of civilized man, and pray for your castrated lord's uber erection, for all the witches have unionized, and their cross-thighs shemale cousins ungrave themselves. Now, dickless shall hide with scorched maggots within bulks of fermented flesh, and the uninspired willingly will dump their heads into used condoms decorating locked-down factory gates, and the uprooted phallus a glorious shall melt inside a female's mustache, tiki blades, our rightful doom shall finally inherit the mottled dawn. End of poem. Okay, so we'll take a couple of comments and then move forward. Laurent, if we can start with you.
For all the witches have unionized and their cross-thighed female cousins ungrave themselves, I swear, reading this was an out-of-body experience in so many ways. The verbiage and imagery was ghosting me in so many directions. I came down with a hard thump at the end. It was bizarre and brilliant all at once, but that's why he's called the Mad Lad.
Absolutely. Really good insights into this kaleidoscopic poem. Though atypical for a celebration of Southern Gothic, I like how he twisted the theme to his purpose, making the tropes sing in a contemporary surreal voice that showed the genre as malleable as an iteration of racism and its ugly stepchildren, economic inequity and hypocrisy in the United States. So I thought it was a great offering. And Bobby, I'm going to give you final word. What do you think?
I am glad I discovered my mute button. I was cackling through the whole thing. I don't know whether he meant it to be humorous or whether it was black humor or whether it was just a grand joke pulled on the reader. I love this piece. I don't know why, but it, the absurdity of it and the metaphors are so artfully assembled, and the juxtaposition of different things. I am a working beggar, a thief of throwaway morsels, a rubber tube stuffed with malignant hate parts. I think that's when I started the uncontrolled laughter. But this is a very artfully written piece. Obviously, it is a set of great care and has some intricacies in it that will only be disclosed to the reader after, I think, several readings and a lot of liquor. I really do admire this piece. I found it entertaining. I found it enjoyable. I was reading the gentleman's bio, and he calls himself a psychopath and a passionate fool, a misanthrope. I think he missed a few adjectives, but that's okay.
Thanks so much, Bobby. Okay, Laurent, where do we go now?
All right, now, unfortunately, we got four or five poems left. I don't think we're going to be able to get through them all, but if we do a couple of quick comments per each, maybe we will. Who knows? I'm going to give this one a quick read. It's called Dripping Southern Gothic by Rick Six. Yes, welcome to our antebellum home. It's been in our family for generations. You know, we don't cotton much to outsiders here. We very much like keeping to ourselves. Why don't you accompany me to the parlor? Ah, this is more like it. Allow me to pour you a drink. I think you'll like this, an old family recipe. Now, allow me to continue. We not only don't like outsiders, but we actively try to discourage outsiders from becoming involved in our tight-knit community. You know, you're looking a bit flushed. Are you feeling all right? And on.
Great read, Laurent. So, yeah, I like this one. I thought that it had deliciously dark subtext sounds, like a trip to the ER might be next on the agenda. A great post. And I'm going to give Kel your thoughts on this one.
Oh, this was fantastic.
Yes, welcome to our antebellum home. It's been in our family for generations. Why don't you accompany me to the parlor? Like, you know, says, what is it, that the thing about the spider to the mouse or whatever? Yeah, this is fantastic. Really a fun rite. You know, you get this sense of, you know, just a sense of horror behind it. You know what's at the very end, you know what the hell's happening. You know, wow, very well done.
Absolutely, great comment. Okay, Laurent, let's see if we can get maybe another one or two in. What do you think?
I think we can. This one is for Kel to read. Kel, Chuck 17.
Oh. Okay. Witch's Brew by Chuck 17. In the center of town gathers a Halloween crowd, a witch and some ghosts all shouting out loud. Some of them seemed to slowly drift in, the witch on her broom brought by the wind. There's a boiling pot shooting steam in the air, a really strange brew with an odor quite rare. The hunchback witch stirs the boiling mess that can blur your vision, put hair on your chest. After a sip, you'll swing from the eaves. People fell down like dead autumn leaves. Windows start breaking, there are cracks in the floor. All of a sudden, you hear slamming doors. The village now haunted by ghosts in the night. The witch jumps on her broomstick and flies out of sight. End poem.
Great read, Cal. Laurent, what'd you think?
Well, yeah, she flew out of sight. Her work was done. Thank you for this very pleasant interlude amongst all the dark and macabre pieces tonight.
Absolutely, yeah. I, too, liked it. I thought it was a fun, rhyming Halloween poem. Nice add to the night. Very well done. Okay, and with that, maybe let's try and get another one in.
I think we can. And, Bobby, this one is for you to read by Stephen New York.
Heidi. Okay. Stephen, NY. Okay, we got the, come on, there we go. The Murder of Crows, First Battle of Kernstown. And by the way, for those of you who do not know, and which I'm sure there are a few, a murder of crows is actually a unit of measure of a flock of crows. It's called a murder. The First Battle of Kernstown between the United States and the Confederate States fought on March 23, 1862 in Frederick County and Winchester, Virginia. A total of 825 soldiers were wounded. 198 soldiers lost their lives. Wrinkled trees, their resting in scattered rows, picture the image of a murder of crows. Crows watching indifferently, almost out of fog. What do they see? Farmer's field, day, appearances in gray, frost gone, spring's hue, appearances in blue. Fancy a vision between the cause, the fight they fight, yet for many they know not why they fight or undergo the blows below a murder of crows. Old tree, naked crown, there resting in scattered rows lay the image of a murder of crows. Generals, do they have a clue attempting to untie the knots, slight squeeze of the heels? Their horse trot, while their brave on both sides begin the shred on piece of field, below the clicks and coos of a murder of crows. Tired tree, there resting crows along the side, clacking bills, coos, clicks, and their rough claws, uninterested, unconcerned how the battle goes. Does the animal view the animal, transfixed, any less than their own wars of deadly scripts? Above fright, above fight, above shots, above the shock, above smolder, above the soldier, above artillery, above the battery, above caliber, above the theater, above sobs, above the robbed, above infantry, above the red, above war, painted brilliantly, weary tree. They're resting in scattered rows, vision the image of a murder of crows. To the side, taking no side, gazing at the haunting crow.
Wonderful read, Bobby. Thank you so much. So, yeah, you know, his construction is always so skillful, and this one is no exception. Murder is a double entendre. Crows is a metaphor. The alliterations, the rhyming scheme, the imagery make for a dark, haunting, yet realistic offering. Very well done. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you, I always try and get my comments done, especially on your show, ahead of time, because the poems are usually worth taking your time with and writing intelligent comments. This is one I did not, unfortunately, get to. I think it was the last one. It was 10 minutes of 10. I was exhausted from doing all the commentary and other things as well. It had been a shitload of rain in this neck of the woods, let me tell you. There were inches of water in the basement. But I'm going to spend some time on this poem, and I'm going to leave a very nice comment in text. I want to just extend my apologies to Art Poet and to Page Promises, both fine poems that I imagine we'll be able to squeeze in tomorrow night on Fill My Eyes show. But with that,
yeah,
I hand
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we'll try and see if we can do that. So, first things first, I want to thank our callers, people that are calling in, commenting. So that is our newcomer, Keith. We appreciate your efforts in trying to acclimate yourself to this new world that we call Late Night Poets. And Victoria. Tremendous insights as always. And then, you know, Pam, we really appreciate all of your efforts. Usually sits in with us before she starts her own show in a half an hour from now. And for the people that are still in the room, I want to thank Kel for spending the night with us, this pre-Halloween celebration. And thanks to Bobby. And special thanks to my step-in co-host, Laurent. Always appreciate your hard work and efforts on behalf of the show. Much appreciated.
Richard?
Yeah?
I have a gift. I have a gift for the LNC peers, our wonderful group of late night poet participants. And writers and readers and participants who couldn't do the shows without. I went rogue tonight, and I did a contest on my own called a Happy Halloween Valentine. Ellen Pierce only, and I'm hosting it, and I'm giving away buku mega points, and it is for the folks who think that Halloween doesn't come enough. We're going to turn it into a Halloween Valentine. So if folks could take a look at that and throw, if they've got pre-writes, that's fine. If they feel so inspired that they're going to give me a fresh write, that's fine too. But like I said, Breeden has lost her mind. She's gone bonkers, crazy, nuts, metal, wild and crazy, off the deep end, round the bend, lost her button. And since my birthday is next month, and I like on my birthday giving things away, I'm giving points away, but the kicker is everyone only has 3 days to do this.
Okay. We better get cracking then. Thanks so much, Bobby.
You betcha. I just wanted to thank all of you. I love this group. I wanted to give them something. And this is what I decided to give them.
Sounds great.
I'd like to.
Also, I want to be.
go ahead.
Keith, you want to say something?
I'd just like to say it was, I'm pleased to have found this group, and I enjoyed everybody's writings tonight, and I'm glad I was able to take part in this.
Stand it.
We're real glad to have you with us. So I've got around 10 seconds left. Stay tuned. Half an hour from now, Pam's show's coming up. Please join her. Half an hour. See you then. Okay, but good night, everyone.
Richard, thank you.
Good night, all.
Thank you, guys. Night.